Hi, I'm Tom Regan, a licensed addiction counselor and grief counselor at Heartview Foundation in Bismarck, North Dakota. And welcome to Recovery Chronicles. This is a program during which we interview people who are celebrating recovery. And our very special guest today is Scott Foley. He's a very young 54 years old. His drug of choice was alcohol. And he has been in recovery for almost 4 years, which is wonderful and beautiful. Welcome to our program, Scott, and thanks for having the courage to say yes.
Thank you.
To being interviewed, you know. And so let's kind of start from the beginning. And where are you from?
Born and raised in Glendive, Montana.
Okay, which is not too far away.
Not too far away.
And what kind of a family background? Mom, dad, brothers, sisters?
Mom, dad, and family of four. I have three sisters, all which are older than me. So I was the baby and the only boy.
Oh boy! So you were you spoiled?
as I convince everyone, never.
Yeah. Well, so. Obviously, this program is about recovery. And so when did you first discover alcohol and especially when did you first discover that it did something for you?
actually, when I was a young teen, there was alcohol in the home all the time. My mother actually is an alcoholic or was an alcoholic also. So we were able to drink in our home at a very young age, probably 13, 14. So I continued that throughout my years. And
was that beer and wine and other things, all of the above?
Actually, I kind of experimented with a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Alcohol was always the drug of choice, but I did, you know, get into a variety of other drugs, marijuana, cocaine, different things like that, all of which never were my thing, never became an addiction. But I did drink heavy from the time I was in high school for the rest of my years. Mm.
Did it do something for you in high school, or was it just something that you did?
Just something that I did. I enjoyed the feeling. Mm-hmm. It was kind of the escape that you hear people talk about. It kind of put everything aside and made you feel good. And so you didn't have to worry about reality or what was going on.
Mm-hmm. You know, let me ask you a question. And you work at Heartview, so you work in the field of addiction. But you hear so often... And Glendive is a small town or a small city. You hear so often, especially from young people, that, you know, when you ask them why they drink or why they drink so much, you know what I'm going to say, the answer is so off, well, there's nothing else to do. But what do you say to that? Is that kind of the way you grew up too? Or what?
I think that's the way I grew up. It was kind of, you had the partiers and then you had the sports people, and I wasn't... active in sports and really enjoyed the partying and then the feeling from it. So,
So athletes never drank?
Not in Glendive.
Okay.
No, it was it was a different crowd, I guess, that I hung with, which is probably the wrong crowd. But I did leave there right when I was 18 years old and fresh out of high school and moved to Colorado and was going to enjoy the big time, and part of that was drinking.
Mm-hmm. What did you do? Move to Denver, the big city, or yeah?
Mm-hmm. I did. I moved to Denver and went to school there, and eventually got into the hospitality business, which kept me moving around the country, and things were going really good. I had worked at the same company for about 20 years. and decided to try something different and never really found that niche. And then I got a job that I really loved in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
That's a beautiful spot, isn't it? It's
gorgeous. Lived there for about 3 years, and after about 3 years, I lost my job just due to the economy, and therefore I was unemployed and found that that was my reason to really take drinking to the next level. So from about 2009 on, I didn't go any minute without a drink in my hand other than when I was passed out.
Yeah. So so what I'm hearing is it got pretty darn bad. I mean, you must have been doing what is called blackout drinking. And what were you living on at the time? When it got so bad.
I pretty well lived on my 401k that I had built up, and pretty well exhausted my life savings. Lost my house to a deed in lieu of foreclosure. Just kind of hit bare bones on everything. I was up to drinking about 1.75 of vodka a day.
And we're talking liters here.
Yes. Yep. And when that wasn't doing the trick, then I would drink even full water glasses full of Everclear. And that kind of pushed me over the edge.
Yeah.
And I just, at that point, couldn't stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my wife wanted me to go to treatment, however, knew that forcing me was not going to do the trick, since there's alcohol addiction in both sides of our family. And one miraculous morning, I woke up and asked her if she would take me to the hospital. And she jumped.
Was that in Colorado or North Dakota? Or?
Actually, when everything was so bad and we had lost the house, I was able to find a job here in Bismarck. And my mother at the time had moved to Bowman, North Dakota, where my youngest sister resides. And so I thought, you know, maybe it's time to get closer to family and try and get my act together. And so that's what brought us to Bismarck. And so I was working successfully. I actually, on my trip out to North Dakota, I took a fall in Miles City, Montana, which landed me in the hospital.
Oh, no.
And so that was my introduction to Bismarck, North Dakota. And I worked for, let's see, probably a year and a half, and was able to disguise my drinking because I think nobody knew the type of person I was when I was sober.
I see. And that was in the hospitality industry?
It was in an IT company.
Oh, I see.
Here in town.
Yeah.
And it worked out pretty good, but then it gets to a point where you're figuring out, how can I get out of work early? How can I get to the liquor store? I had the shakes so bad, and it was getting to be quite the problem. So
you knew, didn't you? I mean, you knew you were an alcoholic at a certain point.
Right. I did know, and I think for me, the harder I tried to stop, I think the more I drank. You know, I learned a lot in treatment at Heartview, and I would come home, and I'm like, I'm just going to have that one drink tonight. And I would have that one drink, and then it was like, well, maybe one more is not going to hurt. I'll just have two. And even with the one drink, that's enough to change your thinking and how you operate. And so you get the second one in, and it's like, okay, well, I'll just start tomorrow. Tomorrow will be a better day. And this went on for, like I say, a very long time. But I got to a point of hiding it, trying to hide it from my wife. However, evidently I was either not a good, successful hider or she's a professional Fruit Loop bird that can find everything.
Yeah. Well, she probably knew you or knows you better than anybody and can, you know, and just knows when you're high, you know, yeah. Knows when. That's what we hear as addiction counselors from the spouses, that I can always tell, you know, when he's done this or that. And
I was good enough to buy the large bottles on the debit card and then buy a stash of smaller bottles, you know, with cash, mm-hmm. you know, because I was a really good hider.
Yeah.
And I would come in and have bottles hidden all over the garage or outside even, and, you know, put the big ones on the counter, and she'd ask me what else I bought. And, well, of course I said nothing. And, as soon as I passed out that night, she would go on her search and have everything sitting on the counter by the time I woke up from that each morning.
Sure. Yeah. So you woke up that one morning and you asked your wife to take you to treatment. How'd that happen? What do you call that? Grace of God, or just sick and tired of being sick and tired, or what do you call that? Very important day.
I think it's a little bit of everything. Definitely the grace of God and sick and tired of being sick and tired. I felt horrible. Mm-hmm. It was just an awful, awful feeling. I was never particularly religious, even though I was raised in the church. And one of the things that I found afterwards through treatment is I knew that I had to make some different choices in my life. So one of those choices was I'm going to get back to church. And, you know, I found a church that I absolutely love. And I actually get upset if I don't get to go to church.
You can mention the name of that church if you want, you know.
Yeah, it's...
you don't have to, but...
No, it's Evangel. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised Lutheran, and I continued going to the Lutheran church. And probably 2 months after I completed my treatment at Heartview, a gentleman asked me to just come and check out the church. So I went to Evangel, and it was very exciting to me. It's non-traditional. It's very new. It's very relatable. I can't say enough. And
well, good for you. And I believe, and by the way, I should say, you're listening to Recovery Chronicles on KDAC, and I'm your host, Tom Regan. I'm an addiction counselor at Heartview, and our guest is Scott Foley. He's 54 years old, and he's been in recovery for almost 4 years. As you know, Scott, we counselors always talk about recovery and how necessary it is for someone to have that spiritual dimension. I mean, I'm convinced that it's hard to have, or maybe impossible to have, what I would call a quality recovery and a better life without cultivating one's spiritual side, which isn't always church or so-called religion. It often is, you have to, in some cases it's called a higher power, but you know, you have to believe in something, and you know, and I'm sure you subscribe to that.
Absolutely.
And now you work in the addiction field. You work at Heartview, and tell us about that.
When I was in treatment, you know, you have goals, I guess, that you set for yourself when you're getting out of treatment. And I had told my counselor that someday I would really like to, you know, work in Heartview, and never thought to this degree. But I happened to run into her at a grocery store a couple years after my treatment, and she asked me how it was going, and I told her, well, you know, I still really dislike my job. It's just not fulfilling for me. And she said, you know what, worst case, just come and start working part-time. Come down to Artview, apply part-time, and, you know, see how you like it. So, ironically, I think it was within the same week, there was an ad posted for a chemical dependency technician. And so I put in the application and was called in right away, since I did know many people there. Mm-hmm. I was offered the job on the spot. Wow. And basically, I just worked every other weekend. So it was very little, but it was very fulfilling to me. I do firmly believe that that helped in my sobriety. I had been there. I had done that. So I could, you know, relate to a lot of the people that were coming into treatment. And so as I was doing that position, I let my boss know that, you know, I really want that job of the resident manager. And at the current time, we didn't have a resident manager, or Artview did not. Mm-hmm. So as the Artview has grown and things have changed, mm-hmm. that opportunity came about. And so I think it was not a secret to those in charge that I was really interested in getting that position. So fortunately, I am currently the resident manager at Artview and absolutely love what I do.
Hey, we could tell people that Artview has 12 residential beds in Bismarck, and then another 16 residential beds at its center in Candu, North Dakota. As you know, I'm a person in long-term recovery myself, and I love seeing you at the residential center there. I can imagine, knowing you as much as I do, I can imagine that you're a calming influence there. And and since you've been in recovery now for almost 4 years, I'll bet if you're like me, you probably thank God almost every day for the credibility that your being in recovery gives you.
Absolutely. It's just great. It's great to see the people. It's great to work with them and see from the day that they come in to, you know, even 5 days later, the progress that they've made, and has its ups and downs like anything.
Yeah.
But definitely more ups.
Good. Well, so. you get to see people in withdrawal, and when they come to the center in pretty rough shape so often. And is there has some things surprised you about working? Some things you didn't expect working at Artview and especially in the residential center?
I think the craziest thing is because I'm a little OCD and pretty particular at what I do, I want to see progress. I want to see progress made really fast. So on my own accord, I've worked a lot more hours than I necessarily need to. But ironically, it's unlike that normal job that I used to go to where, you know, putting in that 45, 50 hour week was very trying. And I mean, if I had to put in double that amount of time, it's still rewarding. I still love it. I still come back every day. It's wonderful to see the progress.
Because you're passionate and compassionate about it.
And bottom line, it helps me. It keeps me grounded and keeps me where I need to be, that makes you remember where you were years ago.
Sure. You know, here's a question for you, do you think most people, and that is the average listener to this radio program, do you think most people would be surprised or most adults would be surprised to see how many young people are at Heartview and in the various programming at Heartview. Did it surprise you? I mean, there are so many patients who are 20-somethings.
Yeah, I think it did surprise me. It surprised me a lot, even, you know, the 4 years ago when I went into treatment. I always thought alcohol was the big thing. And what I'm finding out is the drug problem seems to be almost greater most of the time than the alcoholism. And I think there's people, unfortunately, I don't believe you can come into Heartview or a treatment center if you're underage. But it's amazing how many people are so very young, maybe haven't even hit that 21st birthday, and they already have some serious addiction problems, and it just compounds into many other things.
Mm-hmm. I know, and I have not been a licensed addiction counselor for even 3 years. Of course, I did some training before then, but the number of 20-somethings in particular just really surprised me. I mean, it's certainly more than 50% of our patient population, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't think the general public realizes that.
Correct.
And then the opiates, the painkillers, the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, isn't kidding when it says it is the current epidemic.
Right.
You know, and we see that, and all you have to do is pick up the newspaper in North Dakota, any big city newspaper, and you can read about it. And unfortunately, you can read about the overdoses and even deaths from heroin, and which might be laced with fentanyl, and you know, so quite eye-opening and really quite emotional and quite sad sometimes to work in the field. Do you agree?
I agree. I was just speaking with my wife the other night, and my wife works in an assisted living community, and I kind of compared the treatment center to the nursing facility in the fact that those nurses and those certified nursing assistants or whatever, the CNAs, you know, they build those bonds with those patients, and it's so devastating to lose one, but, you know, they lose them because of age or health and so on and so forth. And I said, I'm finding out that's probably one of the hardest things about my job is, you know, you build those bonds and you really in your heart hope that people do well and can take what they've learned through treatment and build something of themselves and so on and so forth. And then you pick up that newspaper, like you said, and you see the obituaries and you find out somebody overdosed or something. And it's truly an epidemic. Yeah. It's truly bad.
I know, I'm semi-retired right now. I mean, that's what I call myself. My last full-time day at Heartview, I was called into someone's office and I to be told that one of my patients had died the night before, and so I was. Certainly, I was talking to God, saying, "What are you trying to tell me here? Because this is someone that that everyone and this was a very young person and someone that we all loved. I mean, I mean to use that word. And so it was we were all crying, you know, together that day. But that's the so." What are do you think the secrets or some of the secrets to your recovery and remaining in recovery?
I think some of the secrets for me were, when you're in treatment, you're provided with an enormous amount of tools. It's really up to you to use those tools. I think you need to get a support. I think our NA meetings and AA meetings in our community are a phenomenal resource to meet people and the right kind of people. Because unfortunately, with this disease, friends that you thought were friends for a very long time really might not be the best of friends. So you kind of have to look at things and take the tools that you gained and make changes to your life, make changes for the better. I changed habits that I do when I do things and how I do them, maybe even the where I go when I'm out shopping and stuff, just to keep in a positive environment around positive people with good support tools.
Mm-hmm. And we've already talked about the spiritual aspect as being one of your very important support tools. So for someone who might be listening to this radio program today, Scott, and they know they're in trouble, what do you tell them? What could they do? What should they do?
First thing is pick up the phone and call HeartView. The epidemic is so bad in our area that HeartView does have a waiting list. Fortunately, when this happened to me and I decided I was ready for it, I was able to get in right away. Mm-hmm. Now it's so bad in our area that mm-hmm. there's an actual waiting list. But things change every day. Mm-hmm. And I think you need to get in as soon as possible.
Sure. And we've been advising that listeners call 211. You know, yes. That's a lot. And they can... they can put you in touch with the resources. Those operators are sympathetic and trained,
right,
to put you in touch with the right resources depending upon where you live and such. And so,
even just attending an NA meeting or AA meeting, just to get into the community with the right group of people, I mean, even that's very helpful.
That was my first exposure to or attempt at recovery. It was AA, my hometown is Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Well, we've been here now for 37 years, but those meetings are listed in the newspaper, and right. So if you don't subscribe to the newspaper, you can. I think they're online too.
Yes, they are.
Well, Scott, our guest has been mm-hmm. Scott Foley, who is in recovery for almost 4 years. He works at HeartView. Scott, I told you that the time would go quickly. and thank you so much. I think we've imparted a lot of information here. I'd like to close the program by saying the Serenity Prayer.
Absolutely. Would you,
so it goes, God, grant me the serenity. Amen. Say it with me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.